All right, let's dive into a case that's basically Internet History 101.
Oh yeah, Religious Technology Center fee netcom.
Exactly, netcom. It's 1995.
The internet's still the Wild West.
Totally. And this case is about to set the stage for how we think about online responsibility in the age of user-generated content.
User-generated content, huh?
Yeah, you shared some articles and legal summaries about this case.
Oh, right, yeah.
It involves copyright, the Church of Scientology.
And one of the first big internet service providers, Netcom.
Netcom, the big guy.
What's fascinating about Netcom is that it really throws you back to the early days of the internet.
I can only imagine.
We're talking dial-up modems, online forums called Usenet.
Usenet, okay.
Picture, very, very early message boards.
Gotcha.
And this whole new world of digital communication was just starting to take shape.
So set the scene for us. We've got Dennis Ehrlich,
a former minister of the Church of Scientology,
right, posting excerpts of L. Ron Hubbard's works to Usenet.
To Usenet, okay.
But he's not just posting to his personal blog, is he?
Right, he's using a small independent bulletin board system.
Bulletin board system.
Yeah, or BBS, kind of like an early version of a server.
Okay, I'm following.
And this BBS is connected to the internet through Netcom.
So.
So every time Ehrlich posts, his message is copied across multiple computers, first to the BBS, then to Netcom servers,
Okay.
and finally out to the wider internet.
Wow, a digital relay race.
It really was, and this is before cloud computing was even a thing.
I bet.
Yeah.
So the Church of Scientology.
Specifically, its affiliates, Religious Technology Center, RTC, and Bridge Publications, BPI.
Right, they are not happy about this. They see it as copyright infringement.
Of course.
And want Netcom to cut Ehrlich down.
Makes sense.
But Netcom pushes back, asking for proof of copyright ownership first.
And this seemingly simple demand throws a wrench in the works.
House.
With RTC not backing down.
They don't mess around.
They decide to sue not just Ehrlich, but the BBS operator and Netcom.
Wow, talk about a legal showdown.
It was.
So this is where things get really interesting, right?
It is.
The court had to grapple with a brand new question.
Right.
Can an internet service provider,
essentially just a pipeline for information,
be held liable for what their users post?
Exactly. Can they be held responsible for copyright infringement they didn't directly commit? That's the million-dollar question at the heart of Netcom.
I see. And to answer it.
To answer it, the court dove into four key legal issues: direct infringement, contributory infringement, vicarious liability, and fair use.
Okay, that's a lot to unpack.
It is a lot.
Let's break it down, starting with direct infringement.
Okay, direct infringement.
Seems pretty straightforward. On the surface, you infringe on a copyright if you copy and distribute protected material without permission.
You'd think so.
Right.
But in Netcom, the court actually sided with the ISP on this one.
They did.
Yeah, they said direct infringement requires something called volitional conduct.
Volitional conduct.
Meaning the infringer has to choose to infringe, to intentionally violate the copyright.
So it's not enough to simply be involved in the process.
Right.
It has to be deliberate.
Right.
The court said Netcom was acting as a passive conduit.
Just like
their servers were automatically copying and storing the messages.
Think of it like a mail carrier delivering mail.
Oh, okay.
They're not responsible for the contents of the letters, just for getting them from point A to point B.
So using that analogy,
yeah.
Netcom is like the postal service of the internet.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
It does.
But even though they were off the hook for direct infringement,
mm.
the court wasn't letting them completely off the hook, right?
Like,
next up was contributory infringement.
Contributory infringement.
And this is where things get a little more complicated.
It's where it gets tricky.
To prove contributory infringement,
you have to show two things.
Okay.
Knowledge of the infringing activity and material contribution to it.
So did Netcom know Ehrlich was posting copyrighted material?
Well, that's where things get tricky.
Okay.
RTC argued that Netcom's refusal to act after being told about the potential copyright problem could be seen as evidence of knowledge.
So they were unnoticed.
They were.
But didn't act right away.
Right.
But Netcom likely argued that they needed proof of copyright ownership before acting.
Right.
And this is where the court really had to walk a tightrope.
They did.
They said a reasonable jury could conclude Netcom's inaction was enough to establish knowledge.
Right.
But didn't rule definitively.
It was a very cautious approach, recognizing that they were dealing with brand new legal territory.
So what about the second element?
Yeah.
Material contribution.
Material contribution.
Did Netcom materially contribute to the infringement?
This one seems more straightforward.
How so?
They were hosting the content on their servers, making it accessible to others. That's a clear material contribution.
So it sounds like Netcom was in hot water again.
Well, the court didn't rule outright on contributory infringement either.
It didn't.
Nope. Instead, they said it should go to a jury to decide if Netcom's actions constituted substantial participation in the infringement.
I see.
Remember, this was the early days of the internet.
The Wild West.
Exactly. The courts were really trying to figure out how existing copyright law applied to this new world.
It's like they were writing the rule book as they went along.
That's a good way to put it.
So two down, two to go.
Right.
What about vicarious liability?
Vicarious liability. Okay.
That one always trips me up.
I understand.
For vicarious liability,
to stick.
You need to show two things.
Two things.
One, that someone had the right and ability to supervise the infringing activity.
Right.
And that they directly benefited financially from it.
Okay.
So did Netcom have control over what Ehrlich was posting? Could they have opped him?
To a degree, yes.
Okay.
They could have kicked him off their service.
Right.
But the court said that wasn't enough on its own.
So they needed to prove Netcom was profiting directly from Ehrlich's posts.
Exactly.
So if they were getting a cut of every download, that would be different.
Exactly.
But that wasn't the case here.
It wasn't.
Netcom charged flat fees for internet access, not per post or download.
Right, so the vicarious liability argument failed.
Okay, that makes sense. So that leaves us with fair use, the final piece of the puzzle.
Fair use.
This one is always fascinating.
Always.
In this case, Netcom argued that its automatic copying of Ehrlich's messages was transformative.
Okay.
Because it was facilitating communication, not just replicating the content for profit.
Interesting.
So they weren't reprinting Hubbard's works to sell, they were enabling online discussion.
Right.
But I'm guessing RTC had a counter-argument.
Of course, they claimed this harmed the market for Hubbard's works.
Interesting.
Arguing that people wouldn't buy the books if they could get the content free online.
Right. It's the classic fair use debate.
It is.
Is this new use hurting the market for the original work?
Exactly.
That's a tough one.
It is.
So who won on the fair use issue? Did the court definitively answer that question?
Actually, they didn't rule on this one either.
They didn't.
Nope. They said there were still too many factual questions that needed to be sorted out before they could make a call on fair use.
It seems like this case had a lot of those unanswered questions.
A lot of unanswered questions.
It did.
It was a truly groundbreaking case, dealing with issues that had never been addressed before.
Right.
The court was understandably cautious about setting hard and fast rules in such a new and rapidly evolving area of law.
Okay, so let's recap.
Okay.
We've gone through four key legal areas: direct infringement, contributory infringement, vicarious liability, and fair use.
We have.
And it seems like the court only made a firm decision on one of them.
On one of them, yeah.
Right. They definitively said Netcom wasn't directly liable.
Huge win for ISPs everywhere.
It was a huge win.
But they left the door open on contributory infringement.
Right.
Meaning ISPs couldn't just ignore copyright complaints.
So it was a partial victory for Netcom.
It was.
But also a wake-up call for the entire internet industry.
Exactly. This case forced ISPs to start thinking seriously about how to handle copyright infringement on their platforms.
And that's where our deep dive continues. It's crazy to think how much the online world has changed since 1995.
It really is. Wild, right?
We've gone from dial-up and Usenet to streaming and social media.
It's mind-boggling.
It really is. Yet here we are, still grappling with these fundamental questions about online responsibility that Netcom brought to the forefront.
Netcom was ahead of its time.
It's like the court had a crystal ball.
Oh, yeah.
They understood that the future of the internet was going to be all about user-generated content.
Mm.
And that holding platforms directly liable for everything their users did would just be impossible.
It would be like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole.
Exactly.
The court really recognized that the internet thrives on this balance.
This balance.
Yeah, between protecting intellectual property rights.
Right.
But also fostering a space for innovation and the free exchange of information.
A tightrope walk, for sure.
It is.
Imagine a world where platforms were so afraid of lawsuits that they just shut down any possibility of user-generated content.
Oh, wow.
It would be like turning off the lights on the internet as we know it.
No YouTube, no Facebook, no Twitter.
A very different world indeed.
A very different world.
And that's where Netcom's legacy really shines.
Right.
It paved the way for the internet to flourish.
By providing a framework.
A framework.
Yeah, for understanding liability in this new digital landscape.
Okay, so let's talk about that framework.
Okay.
How did Netcom directly influence the development of the DMCA.
The DMCA.
The Digital Millennium Copyright Act that we have today. It feels like there's a direct line between them.
There absolutely is. Netcom laid the groundwork for the DMCA's safe harbor provisions.
Safe harbor.
Specifically Section 512.
Okay.
These provisions shield online service providers from copyright infringement liability.
So they're protected.
They are.
But there's a catch.
There's always a catch. It's only if they meet certain conditions.
So there are rules, specific things platforms have to do to get that protection.
Right. The DMCA establishes a system called notice and takedown.
Okay, notice and takedown.
If a copyright holder believes their work is being infringed on a platform,
they can take it down?
Well, first they have to send a notice.
Oh, right.
Asking for the content to be removed.
Gotcha.
And if the platform complies promptly and in good faith, they're generally protected from liability.
So it puts the onus on the copyright holder to police their work,
yes,
and on the platforms to respond quickly and appropriately.
Right. It's a system designed to keep things moving while trying to be fair to both sides.
But I imagine there are some critics of this system.
Oh, of course.
Who say it doesn't quite hit the mark.
Some critics say the DMCA tilts the scales too far in favor of platforms,
okay,
making it difficult for copyright holders to effectively enforce their rights online.
So they're saying it's too easy for infringing content to slip through the cracks.
Yeah, because the burden is on the copyright holder to find it and report it.
And then there are also concerns about abuse of the system, right?
Right. Someone might file a false takedown notice to silence criticism or spiteful competition.
Hmm. A whole other can of worms.
It is.
It sounds like a complex issue with no easy answers.
No easy answers.
And as technology keeps evolving,
yeah,
new challenges are always popping up.
Speaking of which, let's talk about AI in the metaverse.
Okay, AI in the metaverse.
These new frontiers raise a whole new set of questions about copyright and responsibility.
How so?
Like, where does Netcom fit into all of this?
That's a good question.
I mean, think about it. As AI gets more sophisticated.
And it is getting really sophisticated.
And can create content like music, art, even code.
Yeah.
Who owns the copyright?
Who does own the copyright?
And if that AI-generated content infringes on someone else's copyright, who's liable?
Good questions.
It feels like uncharted territory.
It really does.
It is, and that's what makes it so fascinating.
It's fascinating and scary all at the same time.
It is.
Is it the AI itself, the company that developed it, the user who deployed it?
These are the million-dollar questions legal experts are grappling with right now.
It's a real legal maze.
It is.
And then you add the metaverse into the mix.
Oh, the metaverse.
This world of virtual spaces and digital assets.
Like we're back in 1995.
Right.
Trying to figure out how old laws apply to this brand new, rapidly changing landscape.
It's true. If someone builds a virtual replica of a copyrighted artwork in the metaverse, is that infringement?
Good question.
What about digital assets like NFTs? Are they subject to the same copyright protections as physical art?
The metaverse is forcing us to re-examine some very basic assumptions about ownership and creation in the digital age.
And how do we even begin to apply concepts like volitional conduct when AI is in the mix?
That's the core issue, isn't it?
It feels like it.
Netcom drew a line in the sand
between
passive intermediaries and active infringers.
Okay.
But what happens when the lines get blurred?
Blurred how?
When technology makes harder to distinguish between the actor and the tool.
That is a tough one.
It is.
It feels like Netcom, even though it dealt with dial-up modems and bulletin boards,
yeah,
has a lot to teach us about navigating this brave new world of AI and virtual spaces.
It does.
It really does.
Absolutely.
It does. Even though the technology has changed so dramatically,
right,
the core legal principles,
they're still relevant.
Netcom reminds us that the law needs to keep pace with innovation. But we also need to consider the ethical and philosophical implications of these technologies.
We can't forget about the human element.
Exactly. So where do we go from here?
Where do we go?
What are the key takeaways for our listeners?
What are the takeaways?
As they grapple with these evolving legal and ethical challenges.
I think the biggest takeaway is that the internet, and now the metaverse, rely on a constant negotiation between competing interests.
Okay.
We need to protect the rights of creators, encourage innovation, and allow for free expression.
That's a tall order.
It's a balancing act, and cases like Netcom provide a framework for those discussions.
They remind us to look beyond the technology itself and consider the human element, the actions, the intentions, and the potential impact on real people.
Exactly.
Well said.
Netcom might be a case from the dial-up era, but its lessons are more relevant than ever.
It is.
It's a case study in how the law adapts to new technology and a reminder that the conversation about online responsibility is far from over.
Far from over. Welcome back.
To the deep dive.
Right, to the deep dive. We've been talking about Religious Technology Center v. Netcom.
Netcom.
And it's crazy how relevant this case from 1995.
Some so long ago.
Still is, even as technology has just like leaped forward.
It really highlights how those legal precedents, even those rooted in a totally different technological era, can still have so much impact on how we think about the internet today.
Okay, so as we're wrapping things up here.
Okay.
What are the key takeaways for our listeners?
Takeaways,
What should they be thinking about as they deal with online law, which is always changing?
I think one of the biggest things to remember from Netcom is balance.
Balance, okay.
It's this constant back and forth, right?
Right?
Between protecting creators,
yeah,
and fostering innovation and free expression online.
Free expression, right.
The court in Netcom really tried to find some kind of middle ground.
Middle ground.
Which ultimately has helped the internet take off.
It's a reminder that the law can't like completely block progress, but it also can't just let people exploit things.
You got it.
And those DMCA safe harbor provisions.
Which we talked about before.
Yeah, those came about because of NetCon.
Right.
They try to strike that balance, right?
Right. But as we discuss, it's a system that's constantly being tested and refined as new challenges emerge.
Always new challenges.
Always.
And speaking of those new challenges, like we've talked about the rise of AI.
And the metaverse.
The metaverse, all that. And those technologies are like pushing the boundaries of copyright law.
Totally.
It feels like we're back where we started.
Back to square one.
Trying to figure out how old rules apply to this whole new situation.
We're figuring out how to play the game.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So we're once again facing that question of who responsible?
Responsible for what?
When technology makes it hard to tell what's creation and what's infringement.
That's the big question, yeah.
Like, who owns the copyright to AI stuff? How do those old legal frameworks apply in the metaverse?
Tough questions.
Really tough questions.
These are questions that we're only starting to answer.
Yeah, and VetCom, with its focus on volitional conduct.
Volitional conduct.
And the difference between direct and indirect liability.
Gives us a way to approach these new problems.
I see what you mean.
It shows us we need to look past the technology itself.
Okay.
To the human side of things.
To the people.
The actions, the intentions, and, you know, the potential impact on real people.
So the law is, like, always changing.
It has to.
To meet these new situations, and as we deal with all of this, we got to be curious, willing to learn, and committed to finding solutions that are good for everyone.
Right. Good for both the people making things and the people coming up with new ideas.
Right. That's well said.
NetCom might be an old case, but it's got a lot to teach us.
For sure.
It's a great example of how the law changes with technology, and a reminder that this conversation about online responsibility isn't going away anytime soon.
It's been fascinating, this deep dive into NetCom.
It has.
Thanks for joining us.
I guess.